Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by and welcome to the June NJEDA board meeting. At this time, all phone participants are in a listen-only mode. Please be advised today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens the public comment portion of the meeting, members of the public attending by phone will be advised to press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad to be placed in a queue to speak and provide comment. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star, then 0. I would now like to turn the conference over to Chairman Kevin Quinn. Please go ahead.
All right. Thank you, Operator. Tim, if you could read the Open Public Meeting Notice.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice of this meeting has been sent to the Star-Ledger and the Times of Trenton at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State. Back to you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you, Tim. Manera, if we could do a roll call, please.
Yes. Chairman Kevin Quinn.
Present.
Vice Chairman Charles Farlow.
Here.
Virginia Bauer.
Here.
Marcia Marley?
Here.
Robert Shimko?
Here.
Aisha Glover?
Present.
Noreen Giblin, Executive Representative?
Here.
State Treasurer Elizabeth Moyo?
Here.
Commissioner Maureen Caridi from Banking and Insurance?
Present.
Roberto Soberanis or Commissioner Angelo from Labor?
Present.
Elizabeth Dragon for Commissioner Sean Lasserette from DEP.
Here.
Okay, Phil Elagia. Okay, Rosemarie Hicks. No. And Fred DeMott.
No. Here.
Okay, good morning, Fred.
Good morning,
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
All right, thank you, Manera. Board members, we have one set of minutes for approval today. Before you are the minutes from the May 11th EDA board meeting for your review and approval. And as is our fashion, please state your name when making a motion or seconding. Can I get a motion to approve the May 11th board meeting minutes?
Caridi moves.
Thank you, Marlene. Can I get a second?
Second, Moya.
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals? Abstentions? All right. I have some brief remarks this morning. New Jersey has become a premier destination for film productions and film studio locations. New Jersey has a long history in the film sector. The American movie business started in New Jersey in the late 1800s when Thomas Edison developed early motion picture technology. Film industry in New Jersey waned after World War II until Governor Murphy targeted film and digital media as one of several high-growth sectors. The EDA has supported 68 productions with tax credits since 2018, which will infuse over $750 million into New Jersey's economy. That's dollars. Variety magazine recently recognized New Jersey's prominence in the industry, featuring movies produced in New Jersey, incentives offered, and even and including an interview with our governor. If you haven't read the article, and there's like five or six articles in this big piece in Variety, read it. It's really cool, and it was very educational for me about how expansive the film and media business is becoming in our state. And in mid-May, Lionsgate announced it will build a major $125 million, 300,000-square-foot production facility in Newark, supported by a partnership with Great Point Studios and the New Jersey Performing Arts Center. Today, the board will consider proposed changes to the program rules, which include increasing the amount of tax credits available annually and extending the program's life to 2034. Changes also include increasing the bonus for companies that submit a diversity hiring plan from 2% to 4% to ensure the tax credits benefit people of all backgrounds. The proposed rule changes will also help to encourage and support development of large-scale production facilities and the potential for job creation associated with these projects. That concludes my remarks. Tim, for the CEO's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a few things to go through, and including one very special presentation to Brian that I'll make toward the end of my comments. But I'll try and be brief, because even though we have, for us, we have a short end, so no need for a filibuster. May continue to be busy, and as we turn the calendar to the first week of June, continue to be busy. It is Pride Month. We've been very active in support and doing our best to be more supportive of LGBT-owned businesses, just as we are around minority and women-owned and veteran-owned businesses, particularly small businesses in the procurement process. We had a great turnout at the Big Asbury Pride event on June 1st. We'll be at the Trenton Thunder Pride Night tomorrow night, which is fun. Should be a fun night. And again, that's part and parcel of our commitment, too, and I want to applaud Liz's team, the Treasurer's team, just recently rolled out something signed by the governor around certification of LGBT-owned businesses, which will be enormously helpful for getting more of those businesses into our programs, so that certification sort of unlocks a lot of benefits, not just for procurement, but for our programs as well. We're also in the vein of sort of getting back to normal or something like normal or something like a new normal, whatever we're doing. The first Founders and Funders was back in person last week for the first time since prior to the pandemic. It was a great event. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to be there. Our chairman was able to join there along with a number of our senior staff. A great event, a really good example of, I think, some of the community building and the ecosystem support that the EDA can, and the state can provide around the innovation ecosystem, which becomes only more important as we roll out things like the Innovation Evergreen Fund, like the NJ Accelerate Program, which we have a proposed approval for today, and things like the NOL program. The NOL program, longstanding program, that was supercharged and revamped by the Economic Recovery Act in 2021. Applications are due for that on June 30th. That's a bit of a sort of under the radar but enormously important program that has fueled the growth and the survival and then growth of lots of great New Jersey success stories over the years. So that deadline is June 30th. And then the Evergreen Funding, and the board approved the rules for that back in April. We're in the process of sort of getting ready to do the auction, which is sort of one of the program focused on innovative companies. It's also an innovative program in its own right, and then we are auctioning tax credits to New Jersey corporations. It's the first time we're doing that. Some risk involved or newness involved in doing that, so we're having a really big outreach effort to make sure people who are potential investors in that program or participants in that auction understand we'll do that mid-month. And then as we continue just down the sort of along the both geographic and industry focus axes here, made some news in the latter part of May around the Windport, which has been just an extraordinary success to date. Back in April, the governor announced the first tenant. Construction's underway. There are teams of people working not quite around the clock, but I think we're at double shifts now to get the Windport up and ready for the first New Jersey project, Ocean Wind 1, by the early part of 2024. We also announced that we intend to go out to bid on Parcel B2. Parcel B2 is part of the big parcel that we're in the process of acquiring from the Army Corps via PSE&G, and we'll be back with that acquisition in the July meeting. But we think Parcel B2 will be an extraordinary site for blade manufacturing. And so based on a number of dynamics in the industry, decided to accelerate that procurement process a little bit. We'll be back with more details to the board on how exactly that will work. We announced our intention to do that as a way to signal to the market that we've got momentum. The time is now. Sharpen your pencils, get ready to commit, and think about strong proposals for Parcel B2. So that, enormous amount of things going on, enormously excited about all the momentum we have and the opportunities we have in front of us. On the flip side of excitement is a bit of bittersweet disappointment that Brian Sabina, as we talked about previously, had announced. I've been talking about it for a while, and I kept, sometimes like I do when I get disappointing news, I pretend it's not true and it maybe won't happen, and if I can just sort of hold it off and don't take the meetings where we agree on the end of the movie, maybe it won't happen. Brian, as we all know, is a pretty persistent fellow, made good on his commitment to his wife, most importantly, that they're going to be moving out west, and then with their new baby, we'll be moving out west. And so Brian's approaching his last day. He's been sort of on paternity leave, and then sort of in an advisory role, but is heading towards his last day with the authority. So this will be his last board meeting that he'll be able to be physically present for. Brian was one of the first senior people, I think the first senior person I sort of convinced to join the EDA after I joined in February of 2018. He joined in April or May of 2018 as part of the journey to make a bigger, stronger, fairer, more nimble, more proactive EDA. And his imprint on this organization, on me, on our economy, on our state has been extraordinary. He's been a friend to me and an advisor to me and a source of tremendous ideas and energy, not just for within EDA, but across the entire administration and out in the real economy as well. And so to say he'll be missed is a dramatic understatement. He's been just made an incredible impact on this place and on the state. I have with me to directly mark that, I have a letter. We found the framed version, by the way, this morning I was wondering. I was like, I had a printout version from my printer. Very nice. I have a letter from the governor in a nice frame and everything for Brian that I will read from because it's a letter from the governor. One should read this. Dear Brian, it's my honor to thank you for your outstanding service as Chief Economic Growth Officer for the New Jersey Economic Development Authority. Over the course of your tenure as the Chief Economic Growth Officer, got your title twice, by the way, you have established yourself as an integral part of the EDA and advancing its mission. On behalf of the state of New Jersey, thank you for all the extraordinary work you have done to spur economic development in New Jersey, as well as your incredible efforts in real estate development, infrastructure development, and strategic sector development. In your position, you were able to oversee the vast array of NJEDA clean energy programs, innovative entrepreneurship programs, cutting-edge occupation-based programs, and place-based tax credit programs. You assisted with initiating the construction of the Windport, which is anticipated to be the first purpose-built wind port on the East Coast, and you helped with designing more than 15 new programs under the Economic Recovery Act of 2020. You wrote a great debt of gratitude for your extraordinary efforts to assist in a better quality of life for all New Jersey residents. Thank you again for your tremendous and impactful work. Best wishes for good health and happiness as you start a new chapter in your career. My very best, Philip P. Murphy, Governor. With that, Brian, thank you for everything, and if you want to say a few words to the board, appreciate the opportunity to.
You can
get this nice letter.
Thank you. I'm grabbing this. But first and foremost, thank you to the board. Thank you to Tim. Thank you to the governor. You've truly encouraged and empowered us to think and act and do big, important economic development work when it comes to creating a stronger and a fair economy. And that's you don't get that opportunity very often, and this is a pretty special place to be able to come in and be resourced and encouraged to do that work. Thank you to our entire staff. I have an incredible group of colleagues on the executive committee. We had the privilege of working with great agencies like Treasury and of course, the Attorney General's office, Gabe. You've been probably the truest partner, I won't say in crime, but in adventures that we could have ever asked for. You are an inspirational public servant, an inspirational friend and colleague. So thank you to you. And I say the same thing to all of our executive committee members. It has been an absolute privilege to work with you and to solve problems and to think big with you. And to our staff, it has been incredible to see individuals' growth and just to see our organization grow together and to do so many new things. I'd like to just call Maria Lavand, who's been my assistant over the last 4 years, and she's helped remind me of why this place is so special, that we do great, purposeful, impactful work, but it also is because we like each other and care about each other within the organization that makes this place so special, so thank you to her. Just a couple of things that I think, I consider myself an economic development professional and why I'm proud of the last 4 years. One, we have built probably, among the most diverse toolkit in the country, if not the most diverse toolkit in the country for economic development. We are truly a national leader in terms of thinking and experimenting about how to do economic development, and that's something you should be incredibly proud of. Two, when the pandemic hit, that's a once in a century sort of economic disruption that happens, and to be working with colleagues here and to have attacked that problem the way that we did, faster than the federal government did, faster than almost any other state in the nation, and with such a diverse toolkit, that's one of those memories that I will cherish for my whole career, is those months and long hours and hard work together on that challenge. And then third, we built a capability within the organization that I'm incredibly proud of to take on the next challenge. There's going to be another pandemic or another innovation economy opportunity or another sector that we get a chance to take on. And we've built a way of thinking and a way of doing things within the organization to allow us to tackle that head on. So I'm incredibly proud about those. It is bittersweet for my wife and I to leave New Jersey. We wouldn't be leaving this role if we weren't leaving the state, but with the governor's leadership and Tim and the board's leadership and this incredible staff, I'm pretty sure the next time I come back to New Jersey will be an even better place and a stronger and fairer place when we leave later this month. So thank you for the incredible honor and privilege of getting to work with you all here. Thank you.
All right. It's hard to follow that up with continuing on with our agenda, but thank you, Brian. Those were very inspiring thoughts that, as I was thinking, have the benefit of being absolutely true. This is a great place.
And then, Mr. Chairman, I'm sure we can see Rosemary Hicks has joined.
Okay. Rosemary. All right. So the first item on our agenda is our incentives work. I'm going to ask Ginny Bauer, our chair of the Incentives Committee, to just say a few words before we move on with our agenda. Ginny?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I too, just want to send a personal thanks to you, Brian. Your patience and diligence in explaining a lot of the programs to us has really been helpful, and I just can honestly say that you are a true credit to this agency as well as the state of New Jersey, and I just wish you the very best. So thank you very much on behalf of me and the Incentive Committee. We did meet on May 26th, and we just have two items up for your approval today, a film and digital tax credit amendment, as well as a Grow New Jersey project under for Pearl Capital Business Funding. So that is it for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Jenny. Our first item on the second voting item on the agenda is proposed rule amendments, New Jersey Film and Digital Media Tax Credit. Matt Sestridge, Senior Program Officer of Film and Digital Media Tax Credit Programs, presenting. Matt.
Thank you, Chairman. The members are requested to approve the attached proposed amendments to the rules implementing the New Jersey Film and Digital Media Tax Credit Program based on statutory adjustments across the four bills listed. And authorize staff to A, submit the proposed rules amendment for promulgation in the New Jersey Register, and submit the proposed program rules as final adopted rules for promulgation in the New Jersey Register if no formal comments are received. Subject to final review and approval by the Office of the Attorney General, and the Office of Administrative Law. Just to start with a little background on the program, as many of you know, the film tax credit program provides a tax credit of 35% while qualified film production expenses for film productions who meet one of the following eligibility criteria: either 60% of the film's total production expenses, exclusive of post-production costs, are incurred for services and goods purchased through vendors in New Jersey, or qualified film production expenses in the state from the taxpayer exceed $1 million through authorized New Jersey vendors. The credit amount is reduced 30%. For expenses incurred for goods and services used within a 30-mile radius of Columbus Circle, New York. The digital media production tax credit provides a 30% credit of all qualified digital spend and is available to digital media productions who meet two eligibility criteria. They have to meet both of these. At least $2 million of the total spend must be incurred for services performed and goods purchased through New Jersey vendors, and at least 50% of the qualified digital media costs must be for wages and salaries paid to New Jersey full-time employees. Additionally, the digital tax credit may be increased by a 5% bonus for any expenses incurred for services performed and tangible personal property purchased through vendors whose primary place of business is in the southern part of the state. For both film and digital, there's an available 2% diversity bonus for productions who meet specific hiring goals, and this bonus can be increased to 4% for productions who, in addition to meet the original hiring goals, make certain commitments to hire New Jersey residents for on-screen performance roles. The Film and Digital Media Tax Credit Program has been amended by four separate bills since the last time we brought rules. The current form of the rules were approved back in June 2019, and the following is a summary of the most recent changes. There was an increase in the tax credit award percentage. As initially established, the award for the film tax credit was 30% for qualified film production expenses, and this amount was increased to 35% for any qualified spend incurred through vendors located in the southern counties. The digital media tax credit was initially 20% of the qualified spend, with that same increase of 5%. With the statutory updates, the increase to the film tax credit program was a base credit of 35%, while replacing the Southern County uplift with a reduction to the 30% for those expenses I mentioned used within that 30-mile radius of Columbus Circle. Additionally, the digital media credit was increased up to 30%. However, the targeted Southern County bonus remains. As initially established, the film and digital media tax credit program was originally set to sunset in 2023 and made available up to $75 million annually for film projects and only $10 million annually for digital. The tax credit award percentage was 30% and 20% for digital. The increase in the diversity bonus that the chairman mentioned was the most recent addition of the update. It is for productions that commit to hiring at least 5% of the people hired to be on-screen role performers must be part of an ethnic minority group underrepresented in film or digital media based on their representation in the population of the United States. They have to be hired, if they're hired for accredited role, they have to be residents of New Jersey for at least 12 months preceding the start of filming. And if it's an uncredited role, like an extra, they have to be residents of any municipality in which filming occurs or surrounding municipality for at least 12 months before filming began. They also have to be members of a bona fide labor union representing film and television performers. The new credit amount availability, the ERA created two additional buckets of $100 million each annually, beginning in, and the allocation runs through 2033. Beginning in 2025, the authority has the discretion to increase the film credit awards for studio partners up to $350 million can be made available if there's any excess cap in the Emerge or the Aspire program, and up to $100 million can be made available to increase the annual cap for the film lease partners. The largest change in the program came, as mentioned, with the signing of the ERA, the Economic Recovery Act. It created the two additional buckets of $100 million for productions that received designations as either studio partners or film lease partners. These designations target production companies and studios who commit to large, long-term studio developments in the state. These studios will create significant economic impacts, including capital investment and lasting full-time employment. Production companies pursuing these designations would first have to be approved by the board to receive the designation, and then once they're approved, submit individual applications for each subsequent film project to be approved through our current process. The first designation is studio partners. We have up to three designations available for studio partners for productions who build or otherwise acquire a facility of no less than 250,000 square feet for a period of at least 10 years. As described in the rules, studio partners will be subject to additional application admission requirements, including but not limited to production space floor plans, a copy of the deed and site control documents, and the award calculation for studio partners does remain the same as the legacy productions receive. However, the studio partners would have a separate approval queue to get that additional $100 million, and they are able to receive increased award amounts not made available to legacy film and the film lease projects, since normally the above-the-line wages are capped at $500,000 per person in the normal side of the program, but on the studio partner allocation, depending on the size of the project, the studio partner will be able to capture additional wage and salary expenses for these high-paid individuals that I have listed here in the memo, ranging from up to $15 million on the smaller side to as much as $60 million in wage and salary expenses. Due to the limited number of designations available for studio partners, prior to submitting an application, the studio partner applicant would have to have site control for the production facility, and that location would need either site plan approval, an adopted redevelopment plan by a municipality which contemplates the development of that film studio, which needs to be at least 250,000 square feet, or an executed redevelopment agreement for the development of a film studio of at least 250,000 square feet. Additionally, to be consistent with existing industry conditions, the studio partner would be allowed to sublease part of its production facility, but only for periods of less than 12 consecutive months. Additionally, they would be allowed to sublease any excess portion of this facility unencumbered, any part that's over that 250 minimum. Keeping in mind, if the studio partner does sublease a portion of its premises, the tenant does not receive any benefits of the studio partner. and the studio partner receives no credit for the productions of that tenant. On the film lease partner side, productions can apply for this designation as long as they commit to acquire a facility of at least 50,000 square feet for no less than 5 years. They must also commit to spend on an annual average basis $50 million over a period of 5 to 10 years. Film lease partners receive no additional benefit in terms of the calculation of the award, but they do have a benefit from a separate approval queue and that $100 million annual allocation. As described in the proposed rules, the film lease partners would have to provide additional application submission requirements similar to that of a studio partner, like a detailed floor plan, site control documents, as well as a financing plan of known film projects, as well as a narrative describing how they plan to meet that $50 million average. Film lease partners and studio partners will now be subject to award agreements, which will lay out the requirements for each to maintain that designation, as well as include certain recapture and penalty provisions. For film lease partners specifically, they will commit to provide an annual report, which will include a report from the CPA verifying all qualified film production expenses incurred during their commitment period, and the agreement will include provision limiting the amount of tax credits to film lease partners until they've actually met that $50 million annual average commitment initially. And in any subsequent period, the film lease partner submits a film certification which brings their average below that $50 million minimum, a 20% penalty will be added to all tax credit certificates issued until that annual average can be brought back up. For the studio partners, the award agreement will include provision that they will commit to occupying the production facility for no less than 10 years. Additionally, there will be a recapture provision which allows for the authority to recapture all excess benefits provided to a studio partner if they fail to occupy that facility for the duration of the commitment period. The excess benefits can be calculated by the excess award amounts received based on it being a studio partner, so the added amount they were able to capture for that the added salary expenses as part of that designation. Both agreements will have sections requiring applicants to provide a certificate of occupancy for the facility within 36 months of approval. And we also updated on the program the fee scale to be consistent with other programs across the authority. We modified the film fees from a percentage-based fee scale to a flat fee scale with multiple tiers. The tiers are based on the amount of qualified film production expenses for a given project. This program now has approval fees, which was added to the program. Previously, there was only a two-tiered application fee and a 0.5% issuance fee. In calculating the fee rates, we used a similar approach to what was done for the Aspire program. We developed 5 tiers based on qualifying spend amounts. To keep the overall fee percentage burden under 4%, the upper part of each tier will have a fee burden of less than 1%. Total fees will range from $1,300 for a small production with less than $1 million in qualifying expenses and up to $125,000 for productions with over $30 million in qualifying expenses. And this will require one vote, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Matt, thank you. I just make a few comments here. If anyone was able to follow all of that detail, you should be counting cards in Atlantic City. But this is essentially the essence of the program is very detailed, and you had to walk through all that. What I want to assure the public listening in, and for those other board members who are not on the incentives committee, is that you know this is a set of materials that we've reviewed over, I think, several months now and iterated multiple times because, again, if this is your first exposure to these rules and requirements, this is beyond the capabilities of most human brains. But I just want to assure the public and other board members, the Incentives Committee has reviewed this thoroughly over several months and seeks its support among the board. Are there any questions for Matt?
I just want to make sure I'm clear on it. So we're incentivizing studios to come in. They'll fit out their studio, and then they'll be able to eligible for other film and tax credits after if they produce films, so they get a two-for-one.
Not quite two-for-one, but, yeah, if you get one of these designations, you essentially get a membership card. It gives you a little code, and when you fill out your tax credit applications, you get a better tax credit.
Okay.
So it's encouraging folks to build those studios.
The other stuff, I'll have to read.
Have to make a chart.
Other comments or questions for Matt? If we have no other comments or questions, Matt,
Hi, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, it's Rosemarie. I just heard the other question. I thought when we had talked before that there wasn't like a, I don't want to call it double dipping, but they don't get to go to the same well twice. But what I think I just heard is that there's one bucket to have them set up and build a studio, and then they get to come back for additional tax incentives for actual filming? Is that what was just said?
It was what I intended to say. Morning, Rosemary's tip. There's no tax credit to get the designation. You get a designation by saying, hey, we're going to build a studio of up to whatever it is, 250,000 feet, or excuse me, at least 250,000 feet. That then qualifies you for the films they're going to be shot there, or the TV shows that will be shot there. When they then come, and there's no financial support around that first designation, they would then come back and say, great, we're making, you know, Spider-Man 17 at one of these film studio partners. We get a better tax credit than we would have otherwise if we were filming it at some place that is not a studio partner. So you get a, it's not a double dip by any stretch of imagination, by any means. It's an enhanced credit for those places. There's only one though.
Well, all right. So when they're coming into town to build, they're not, there's no incentive, and they're not receiving any funding to build.
If they do, it'd be a separate approval. And if they came in and applied for Aspire, for example, that'd be a separate approval, separate from this process.
So it is two different programs that they're receiving, that they're getting funding for.
They could, in theory, participate in two programs. What we're describing today is just the one program. They could, in theory, apply for other programs as well, but that would be a separate approval and a separate come with its own set of requirements. The film tax credit is only at the production. You know, film tax credit is only at the production level. It incentivizes, you know, film XYZ.
So if we look holistically, then what is the real financial commitment and impact, and what are their collective possible benefits in terms of, since it's two separate programs?
Yeah, so real estate construction projects are eligible to apply for the Aspire program. And that will be its own application with its own evaluation of the net benefit, and there's a net benefit test in that scenario, separate from any discussion of or provision of film tax credits. The film tax credits are based on whether they meet the statutory definition of the eligible films in New Jersey.
Thanks, Tim. I didn't understand that, and I guess maybe I heard something differently during the other meeting. But I guess it would be helpful if maybe we could find, or if we're reviewing this in the pre-meeting, to find out or to get a more holistic overview that these are the possible buckets, because they're not coming to town to film in isolation. So they're coming to town or build in isolation. So the build is, for lack of a better term, phase one, and then the other programs become phase two. So holistically or collectively, what is that potential financial benefit that we're providing to film, as well as what is the benefit to the state of New Jersey in terms of what we're going to receive or reap from having film come in and build studios and film here? So, thanks.
Yeah, the Aspire program is a net benefit test, which would take into account the impact of film tax credits and the what the net benefit of that would be. And that any application of the Aspire program to support a film studio or a mall or an apartment building or anything else has to stand on its own 2 feet, separate from whatever they're doing inside. That math would certainly take into account whether we are also incentivizing or subsidizing, for lack of a better word, the production activities inside. So you take that all into account so that you're not, that arithmetic ensures against any sort of double counting or double dipping.
All right.
Thanks so much.
Other questions, observations? We have no other questions. Can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
Give 1 second.
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Noreen. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's go. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
Let's go to the next item, Agro New Jersey. COVID-related termination for Pearl Capital Business Funding, LLC. Susan Greitz, Director, Incentives Relationship Management, presenting. Susan.
Good morning.
Morning.
As you said, this is actually a growth termination request for Pearl Capital Business Funding, LLC. Pearl Capital specializes in short-term capital advance solutions for underbanked and credit-challenged businesses. They were approved for a $5.6 million 10-year grow back in January of 18 to incent the creation of 75 new jobs at their existing facility. That's about 13,000 square feet in Jersey City. They completed that project actually later that year in December with 66 new jobs, and that resulted in a slightly decreased award of $5 million. They have been in compliance for the last couple of years and received tax credits totaling $990,000 to date. They have, since COVID, obviously, as many businesses, we hear the stories every day about the challenges they had during that time and how they've dealt with employment since then. One of the other that we won't get into too much detail today, availability under the ERA COVID relief options is to suspend tax reporting for two tax year credits of 2020 and 21, which they have requested. That would mean that their eligibility period is extended and those years tagged to the back of the award. So they've asked for those two suspensions, and now they've asked for a termination, citing those COVID impacts. So as far as the termination, in January 21, the Economic Recovery Act amended the GROW law to allow GROW businesses impacted by the effects of the pandemic to terminate their agreements without the threat of recapture. Prior to the onset of the pandemic, Pearl Capital had about 66 employees, and as most businesses we've run into, sent all their folks home in March 20. And have stayed remote since that time. They currently have about 48 employees. The concern they have going forward is that we have a 60% requirement for eligible employees to be at the QBF, and they're concerned with their talent pool. It'll be hard for them to continue hiring and maintaining employees when others that are similarly situated have more flexibility to the remote policies they can enjoy day-to-day. So they've presented to us a CFO or a CEO certification of those impacts, and we feel that it meets the requirements and are supporting their request for termination to you today.
Thank you, Susan. Do we have any questions for Susan? We have no questions for Susan. Can I get a motion to approve?
Motion. Robertson.
Thank you, Robert. Can I get a second?
Dragon, second.
I'll second.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Any discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Thank you, Susan. Let's move on. As chair of the policy committee, this month the committee reviewed the application fee waiver for the Asset Activation Planning Grant Program, the Food Security Planning Grant Program, and the Historic Property Survey Grant Program. We also discuss updates to the delegation of authority for the Angel Tax Credit Program, the NJ Innovation Evergreen Program, legal affairs, administrative overhead and program costs, and the Sandy programs. There's a lot of detail in the delegations as well, which I'm sure we'll enjoy after our film tax credit deep dive. So let's move on. Rucha Gadre, Senior Advisor, Food Security and Innovation, presenting the application fee waiver for the Asset Activation Planning Grant Program, Food Security Planning Grant Program, and the Historic Properties Survey Grant Program. Rucha.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning, everyone.
I am here today requesting delegated authority to the Chief Executive Officer to waive application fees for the three planning grant programs that the Chairman just mentioned, which is the Food Security Planning Grant Program, Asset Activation Program, and Historic Property Survey Grant Program. The eligible applicants for the fee waiver would be municipal governments, municipal authorities or commissions, and redevelopment agencies located in municipalities with 2020 Municipal Revitalization Index score in the top 10% of all municipalities statewide. Planning grant program seeks to assist communities in leveraging planning dollars and building capacity. Asset Activation Planning Grant Program was approved by the board at its March 2022 meeting. Food Security Planning Grant Program and the Historic Survey Grant Program were approved by the board at its April 2022 meeting. The program specifications of these three programs include a requirement of an application fee of $1,000. Of significant concern is the financial impact the fees may have on certain municipalities, authorities, or commissions or redevelopment agencies that do not ultimately get the award. Pursuant to the New Jersey Administrative Code, Title 19, Chapter 30, Subchapter 6.7, authority may grant a fee waiver when the imposition of a fee would impose an undue financial hardship. Pursuant to this authority, the board is requested to amend the specifications of these three programs to include a fee waiver for any municipality, municipal authority or commission, or redevelopment agency located in municipalities ranked in the top 10% of the 2020 MRI score. DCA's Municipal Revitalization Index serves as the state's official measure and ranking for municipal distress. MRI ranks New Jersey's municipalities according to 8 separate indicators that measure diverse aspects of social, economic, physical, and fiscal conditions in each locality. This fee waiver will enable New Jersey's most financially distressed municipalities, municipal authorities, commissions, or redevelopment agencies located in those municipalities that are ranked in the top 10% of the 2020 MRI index to avoid any financial hardship to the fees may cause and provide access to the dollars through these three programs. This request is also consistent with the fee waiver granted by the board for applications to the Brownfields Impact Fund approved in October of 2021. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Great. Do you have any questions for Rucha?
Hi, this is Joyce Murray. Quick question. Can a municipality or agency, let's say if they apply and they're not successful the first go-around, we waive the fee if they come back and make adjustments to their application? Will they also get that fee waiver again? Or is it like a one-time fee waiver for one submission? Or how will that work?
For the Food Security Planning Grant Program, it's a competitive program, and it's one application per food desert community. So the applicant, once they apply, if they fall in the top 10% of the MRI score, they would not have to pay the application fee.
And it's not necessary, depending on the program, it's pretty, these are probably one-time programs?
Yes, these are all pilot programs.
So I don't think these are going to be living forever. An application will be out this summer?
Yes.
Thank you. This summer, and that's
because the program will be out of money.
Because the program, we're going to, right, it'll be a one-time
right
on that. But again, in theory, if there was, at the board's, you know, direction, if there was a second round of the program with additional funds identified, I would imagine that we would roll this forward into a second round, if such a round were to exist.
Supply could meet the demand.
The plan.
Okay.
Right. I have a question. It's probably more for Gabriel. So presumably the statute is for the waivers on a case-by-case basis, and we're doing it proactively for a class of municipalities. You're comfortable with your interpretation of the statute that we're within our authority under the statute to?
Yeah, so it's actually an EDA rule. So there is some ability going forward if we want to modify that, as any rule amendment. But yes, what we have done that, or the board has done that, for example, for the COVID programs, that was one where that was done, where the idea was that while it works on a case-by-case basis. On the regular program, say the regular loan program, somebody can come forward and show a unique hardship. These are ones where it's like a categorical hardship, to put it that way. But, yes.
Good. Thank you, Charles. Any other questions for Rucha? We have no other questions. Can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion.
Barrel, I'll move it.
Thank you. Jenny, can you make that a second?
Certainly.
Thank you. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed?
Aye.
Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's move on. Delegations of authority. The Angel Tax Credit Program, non-discretionary declinations. New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Program, legal affairs, administrative overhead and program costs, and Sandy programs. Chris Baker, Chief Legal and Administrative Affairs Officer, presenting. Chris.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning, board members. And I'm happy to be here this morning to present the fourth installment in our series of delegation of authority board items. And quick, by way of reminder, we undertook this project at the recommendation of our board governance consultants. We made a number of recommendations, quite a few of which related to delegations of authority. The gist of those was that the board should be spending more time on things like creating new programs, strategic planning, and setting policy, rather than focusing on individual transactions and contracts. So, quick recap of the board items that have been approved to date. First, we had the board approve a brand new delegation of authority policy. Next, the board approved increasing delegated authority thresholds for one of our programs that had a high volume of transactions. That was the New Jersey Film and Digital Media Tax Credit Program that we heard about. Then last month, the board approved delegated authority for a bunch of specific programs and processes. This month, we're recommending that the board approve delegated authority for some other programs and processes. Chairman, I promise not to regurgitate the 12-page single-spaced board memo that was in the material, so just hit some of the highlights.
Thank you kindly.
My pleasure. Five of the proposed delegations of authority relate to our legal review process. So our legal review process is what we do to confirm that applicants for financial assistance don't have a legal history that would recommend against EDA providing financial assistance. We verify their disclosures, and we do our own investigation to just check into these applicants. If the businesses disclose information, or as a result of our due diligence, we find information that indicates that one of the elements that are in our rules, you know, the business has an issue, then board action might be required. So, for example, the board might decide to debar, disqualify, or suspend a business if they have something in their past that would justify it, or the board might look at the information and decide that there are mitigating factors which would, you know, weigh against disqualifying or debarring them. And historically, the board has delegated authority to staff to clear applicants under a variety of circumstances. So, for example, years ago, the board up the staff to the staff has authority to clear things like minor criminal and quasi-criminal violations, things like traffic offenses, petty disorderly offenses, things like that. So today we're asking the members to clarify and expand some of those prior delegations. To be clear, all recommendations for disbarment, disqualification, and suspension will continue to come to the board. Staff's not seeking delegated authority for that. Similar last month, we're proposing an increase in certain thresholds for delegated authority. So we're asking the board to increase the authority to approve contracts up to $500,000. These are contracts for procured goods and services. We're also requesting the board delegate authority to permit the CEO to approve and execute memoranda of understanding where we're getting, same thing, goods and services from other governmental entities. And the board, and the total amount, the total value is up to $500,000. The board approves almost 20 MOUs just last year alone, so you think about that. And a lot of those MOUs would fall within this delegation of authority. This delegation would, in the future, obviate the need for board approval for those kinds of MOUs, up to the $500,000 threshold. Again, like last month, we're asking the board to delegate authority to decline applications for non-discretionary reasons. What does this mean? This means we have received an application that on its face does not meet board-specified eligibility criteria. The board approved a bunch of those last month. This month we're here looking for the same delegated authority for the Angel Tax Credit Program. Like the delegations approved last month, staff will document the basis for the declination, will notify the applicant of the reason for the declination, and the applicant will have the right of appeal. We're also requesting a new delegation for the New Jersey Innovation Evergreen Program. Under the Evergreen Program, qualified corporations may purchase tax credit to raise funds, and then the authority invests those funds in high-growth businesses located in New Jersey. The purchasers also are required to make strategic commitments. These are things like hosting in-person meetings, and those are also approved by the board. What we're asking is for a new delegation to permit staff to modify those strategic commitments. So what does that mean? It means, for example, you know, what we saw during the course of the pandemic is, as a result of executive orders that were entered, businesses couldn't do the in-person meetings. So this delegation would permit staff to approve a modification as long as an alternative strategic commitment was provided and was comparable in terms of being at least 90% of the anticipated cost and under the scoring rubric that the board has approved. This is just in circumstances where there's a reason why the company can't fulfill the original strategic commitment. Finally, we're seeking delegations of authority related to Sandy programs. These are pretty simple. These delegations would permit staff to extend completion deadlines consistent with the deadlines approved by the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development and the Jersey Department of Community Affairs. I just wanted to mention that these and other proposed delegations did go through the committee process, were reviewed and discussed during the committee meetings. Committees asked some good questions, poked and prodded a bit at these, and we did withdraw one and make some modifications consistent with feedback that we got from the committees. Happy to answer any questions anybody might have.
Thank you, Chris. Questions for Chris?
This is Rosemarie. I have a question. There's a lot of delegation of authority requests that have been coming through, and it's a little confusing in terms of collectively what we're delegating because we're getting the, adjustments or changes each month. And I think it would be helpful if we could get maybe a chart that shows all of these different delegations that are being requested and that have been approved so that we really understand holistically or in the bigger picture what we are approving and agreeing to because it's just, we're coming back and we continue to make adjustments, which is a good thing. But I think we need to understand what that true impact is. So it just makes me a little hesitant to say, yes, let's do it when I may not, and some of us may not understand that full picture. And my other question or comment is regarding the increase
of the delegation to $500,000 or $500,000 per MOU. The question is whether or not one organization or one or additional municipality or government agency, opposed to, let's say, it's a $1.5 million MOU, if we break that down into three MOUs that are $500,000 each, it's under that threshold, and, again, we're not getting the full picture. So, again, I'm a little hesitant that are there some safeguards or triggers in place that would avoid making MOUs smaller in order to get to a threshold so that we are aware, again, of bigger picture and impact.
Okay. Thanks, Rosemary. And actually, your first question about the list is that's an excellent point. When the board approved the delegation policy back in March, we actually included that right in the policy. So the delegation policy itself requires us to have a master list that's, you know, and you know, historically there's been lists at EDA and the board has not had visibility into those. But we put that right in the delegation policy that we're going to have a master list, and that's going to be posted in Convene and accessible to the board at all times. So we're getting through. We had originally envisioned this project as a, you know, coming to the board once. This project was huge. It was mammoth. It was a lot more involved than we originally anticipated. So, you know, we broke it into bite-sized pieces and have been bringing pieces to the board each month. So that I will admit that list is not yet up in Convene, but it will be shortly. We have a draft, and as soon as we get through the last of these delegations, it will be, and I'm going to say finalized, but that's not the best word to use because this thing is never going to be finalized because every month that the board approves new delegations, we're going to be updating that chart so that it's a living, breathing document that's going to be accessible and the board can look at it at any time. So I appreciate that question, Rosemary. It's a great question, and we've thought about it, and the board's already approved a policy that that requires that. The second question you asked about whether we would break MOUs into pieces to kind of avoid the threshold, I will tell you that it would not be in our best interest to do that. We'd be creating more work for ourselves, and in any event, Gabriel is going to keep us honest and not let us do that. There's actually a statute that prohibits governmental entities for doing that in the context of procurements, and there would be no reason for us to do that in the context of an MOU.
MOUs are only intra-governmental. The municipalities cannot get MOUs. It's state government, state instrumentality.
I didn't hear what Tim said.
You mentioned municipalities. The MOUs are only with state instrumentalities, so state universities, other agencies.
Okay, I've done a few with the federal government, the
FDA. The federal government as well. But, right, municipalities are not eligible for MOUs. Municipalities have to apply for grants or programs.
And we did ones with the counties for the COVID funding.
And in no way do these delegations of authority impact the procurement process that you're required to go through.
Oh, no. No, the very good point, Chairman. It's two different things.
Correct. Christine, so do some of these delegations, I guess more of in a general sense, do the delegations, and especially the legal ones, does it affect the appeal process of applicants to the board in any way, specifically with regard to the standard that the board would then apply?
So with our disqualification and debarment rules, the way that process works is if a company were to so if the board were to vote to disqualify or debar or suspend the applicant right of appeal, they actually go to the Office of Administrative Law and have a full-blown hearing in the Office of Administrative Law.
So is that now being bypassed?
So, no. And to answer your question, the staff delegation and the legal authority, the debar and disqualification, is only to not debar and not disqualify. So actually there would be no appeals from that. any decision to actually debar, disqualify, or suspend comes to the board. So then that kicks off the more formal appeal process.
Okay. Other questions? If we have no other questions for Chris, can I get a motion to approve?
Giblin, so moved.
Thank you, Noreen. Can I get a second?
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Jenny. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right.
Sorry, I'm going to abstain on this one. I just feel like we need a little bit more, so I'll abstain. I don't want to hold it up. Thanks.
Thank you, Rosemarie. The next set of items on our agenda are under the purview of the Director's Loan Review Committee. Marcia Marley is our chair. Marcia, would you like to say a few words before we get started here?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I just want to reiterate a deep thank you to Brian for his immense contribution to the EDA while I have been a board member. His knowledge, understanding, and clarity on so many issues will be greatly missed. At its May 26, 2022 meeting, the DLRC reviewed and provided input on the following two items: a proposed $7 million standalone bond for the Atlantic City Sewage Company, which was revisited after the previous month, and a New Jersey Accelerate 10-year convertible loan for $52,500 for Princeton New Energy, Inc., which is an innovative clean tech startup company focused on the direct recycling of lithium-ion batteries, LIBs, from electric vehicles and consumer electronics. Chairman, these items are now before the full board for approval. I turn it back over to you.
Great. Thank you, Marcia. So the first item is the Atlantic City Sewerage Company, standalone bond. David Lawyer, Managing Director, Underwriting, presenting. David.
Thank you. The Atlantic City Sewerage Company is a wholly owned subsidiary of SR Utility Holding Corp. and was founded in 1888 and incorporated in 1890. The company's principal office is located at 1200 Atlantic Avenue, Atlantic City. ACSC is a privately owned public utility corporation of the state of New Jersey that owns and operates a wastewater collection system that is comprised of approximately 100 miles of sewers and seven pumping stations with a combined capacity of 50 million gallons a day. The system services approximately 7,600 customers in Atlantic City. This project qualifies as an exempt public facility sewage project under the IRS code. Authority assistance will enable ACSC to finance the construction, rehabilitation, and upgrade and expansion of various sections and components of the water of the sewer system required to meet the needs and demands of Atlantic City while maintaining the environmental integrity of the region. This request received preliminary approval at our April board, and now the applicant is ready for final approval.
Thank you, David. Questions for David? We have no questions for David. Can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
Robert Chimko.
Jenny Bauer, I'll second.
Thank you, Robert. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, thank you. Next item on the agenda. New Jersey Accelerate, Princeton New Energy, Inc., financing of $52,500, Monica F. Wall, Senior Product Officer, Innovation Programs, presenting. Monica.
Good morning, everyone. I'm presenting the New Jersey Accelerate Loan Benefit application for Princeton New Energy, matching the investment made by Clean Tech Open. New Jersey Accelerate is a pilot program in which the NJEDA partners with best-in-class accelerators. There are three benefits available to accelerators and their graduates approved to participate in the program. The first benefit is financial support for approved accelerators to host events in New Jersey.
The second benefit provides rent support for the graduate companies at qualified New Jersey facilities. And the third benefit is the one I'm going to discuss today, is a convertible note from the NJEDA that matches the investment made by the approved accelerator into a graduate company. Cleantech Open is one of five accelerators currently approved for NJ Accelerate. Operating since 2005, it is one of the world's largest cleantech accelerators. Through their annual program, the accelerator has trained over 3,500 entrepreneurs from 1,800 early-stage clean tech startups. Princeton New Energy is a clean tech company that spun out from Princeton University in 2019. The company's technologies focuses on spent recycling lithium-ion batteries from electronic vehicles and consumer electronics. Currently, the industry has issues with high operational costs and poor recycling efficiencies. Using a novel and proprietary process, the company can produce high-quality materials in a cost-efficient, environmentally friendly solution. Located in Bordertown, Princeton, New Energy management and staff have extensive experience in the fields of energy and advanced materials. With currently 10 employees located in New Jersey, the company forecasts continued rapid growth. Princeton New Energy is a graduate of Clean Tech Open's Northeast region. Upon completion of the accelerator program, the company was chosen as the winner of Clean Tech Open's U.S. National Grand Prize from the annual cohort of more than 120 companies. As the winner, Princeton New Energy received a $50,000 investment from Clean Tech Open. This is the match funding source for the NJ Accelerate loan. Additionally, the company will receive a 5% bonus for a total amount of $52,500. Since the company is certified, the New Jersey Department of Treasury as a minority-owned business, so they get the bump in the award.
Thank you, Monica. Do we have any questions for Monica? If we have no questions for Monica, can I get a motion to approve?
Marcia, motion to approve.
Thank you, Marcia. Can I get a second?
Fred Dumas, second.
Thank you, Fred. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, we have an item on our agenda from the Real Estate Committee, our Chair of Real Estate, Charles Sorrell. Charles, would you like to share a few words?
Yes, Chair, thank you. And also as a committee chair, I'd be remiss not to recognize Brian for his contribution to the EDA and involvement with the board and the committees. I found Brian's interaction with both the board and the committee to be consistent with a high level of intellect and character in everything that he presented to the board. We appreciate you and good luck. So the Real Estate Committee had one matter that they discussed. It was a supplemental MOU for the Capital City Redevelopment and NJEDA MOU. It's with regard to project-related work and fees for the sale and redevelopment of the former taxation building.
Thank you, Charles. So let's go with that. The supplemental MOU between Cap City Redevelopment Corp and NJEDA on project-related work and fees regarding the sale and development of the former taxation building. Danielle Esser, Director of Governance, and Juan Burgos, Director of Development and Finance, Real Estate, presenting. Danielle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the board. Pursuant to the existing 2022 MOU between the CCRC and the EDA, EDA shall be reimbursed for administrative fees and costs for managing project-related work, and the EDA assists CCRC in undertaking real estate and or project-related work. The purpose of this supplemental MOU is to define the parameters for the project-related work and administrative fees specifically associated with the sale and redevelopment of the former taxation building. The EDA project services will include, but not be limited to, one, coordinating the overall publicly advertised bidding process known as the Request for Offers to Purchase, RFOTP, managing the property and overseeing the sale and closing processes, drafting required documents for proceeding with the sales transaction, and monitoring the transaction for compliance with state provisions, including affirmative action, prevailing wage requirements, and job creation.
EDA has already assisted CCRC in some of these activities, and the parties are in the process of completing the balance of the project-related work. EDA's usual and customary fee for such project-related services is a fee equal to 8% of project costs. Under this MOU, the project cost will equal the sales price that will be paid by the successful respondent to the RFOTP. EDA's fee will be paid from the closing proceeds, provided that the sales transaction closes title. This fee is comparable to EDA project management fees for similarly sized project-related work. This MOU will become effective upon approval by both boards of the CCRC and EDA and execution by authorized representatives. The MOU will remain in effect for 2 years and may be subsequently extended for 1 year upon mutual written consent of the parties if there's additional monitoring needed. Thank you, and happy to take any questions at this time.
Great. Thank you, Danielle. Any questions for Danielle? If we have no questions for Danielle, can I get a motion to approve?
Jenny Bauer, I'll move it. Caridi, second.
A second. Jenny, can we make that a second, please?
Sure, of course. Thank you. I'm sorry.
Thank you. We have some folks in the room here. They're just, I hear them quicker.
I got it. I wish I was there. Sorry.
Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? Before heading into public comment, I'd like to share that there will not be an executive session. The Grow New Jersey item that was on the agenda regarding D'Artagnan has been withheld from consideration from today's board meeting. I'd now like to open the public comment portion of the meeting. I'd first like to ask Daniel Lesser to read the NJEDA's public comment policy and process for this board meeting. Danielle.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. As stated in NJEDA's public comment policy, members of the public who wish to provide public comment and are attending in person will be acknowledged to speak during the public comment portion of the meeting. Members of the public attending the meeting by phone who are interested in providing public comment are instructed to press 1, then 0 on their telephone keypad to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue based on the order received. NJEDA's public comment policy, which is also available on the NJEDA website, is as follows. Each speaker will be prompted to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization affiliation, and the topic on which remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit comments to matters pertaining to the authority. Staff will prompt the speaker once their time is expired, and a speaker may not register to speak more than once during the same public comment period to ensure there's enough time for all those who wish to speak. Speakers may provide related documents, printed comments, or materials attached to an email. We look forward to receiving your public comments at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Danielle.
I don't see any members of the public present.
I don't see any members of the public present in person,
so we can go to the online.
Operator, let's see if we have anybody on the line.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, for members of the public on the phone, if you wish to ask a question, please press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press 1, then 0. One moment, please, for our first question. However, at this time, no one is queuing up.
All righty. Thank you, operator. So if there are no additional comments, I'd like to thank everyone for their participation this morning. I'll now make a motion to adjourn the meeting. Can I get a second?
Second.
Thank you, Robert.
Jenny, I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thank you, everyone. This concludes our meeting. Thanks,
everybody. Have a good
one. When's the first evergreen launch?
Late summer, early fall.
That concludes our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T conferencing service. You may now disconnect.